Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted, definitely not salesy or boring, just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
What's going on? Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today, almost the middle of July. What's going on, Oliver? How you doing?
Hey, I am very good. Thank you, Jason. How are you? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Super excited. You are frozen. I can't tell if that's me or if it's you, but we'll just keep on rocking and rolling. Everybody, welcome to...
I was just, just staying very still. That's what I'm doing.
I love it. Well, welcome everybody to Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt. This is episode 10. I can't believe it. We're already in double digits. Super exciting to be here. While you're reconnecting and adjusting on your side and going out of frozen mode, very excited to announce before we jump into today's content that you, the wizard behind the scenes, the man with the excellent skills, has put together and launched the website as of last night. So for people who are watching this, listening to this, or on the replay, make sure to go to callcenterconfidence.com. So we've had that domain, finally got it set up. There's a lot of great stuff on there. If you want to see the previous episodes that we have, they are all in there as a player. They're also available on YouTube. We're going to put those everywhere else also. And there is a way to actually watch the live stream. So if you're catching this on YouTube, Facebook, or LinkedIn, or you're listening to the replay and you actually want to watch it through the browser and not on social media, you can go to callcenterconfidence.com, where there is actually a live stream player in there for when we go live. You can join the email list and join that community. If you want to be a guest or want to be involved in the show in any way, please join the list as well. Oliver, are you back?
I'm back, but am I still frozen? On my end, I'm not frozen, but I keep jumping around.
Well, on my side, it is, and it could just be me. I don't know. Looks like I can't tell, but this is the fun of live TV, if you will. So we'll just roll with it.
Exactly.
But again, excellent job with the website, with getting that launched, with everything that you've been doing behind the scenes to make that happen. So very excited for that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's going to be great. Please log on, check out the website. We're also doing, even though I'm frozen, I'm switching computers as we speak. See, look at that. I'm multitasking. Not to mention that we also have a brand new sign-up link as well for all of our live events to ensure that everybody out there who watches, wants to listen, wants to pay attention, has access to a brand new email system that will send you a link or a reminder to your calendar and your diary every time we go live, every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And it will be sent to you, giving you a reminder and dropping, of course, our Call Center Confidence webpage link in that email so you can go straight to our episodes. Now, that is luma.ma/Call Center Confidence. I will drop that link on the video chat in just a few moments when I get everything moving and grooving on my end so that anybody can join it. So you got the website, you got a sign up link. We're moving, Jason. We're on fire. We're moving with the times.
We are. It's so awesome. I appreciate you and everything that you're putting into this just to build this community, make it integrated with the technology and build people together. I put it on the site on the screen here if you're watching it live or watching the video replay, lu.ma/callcenterconfidence, spelled the American way, by the way, for everyone who wants to know the URL. We also have Call Center, CENTRE confidence.com, that I also bought for my friend Oliver for his side of the pond. And we'll get that pointed to it as well. I didn't want to leave you out, so Got to take care of your people.
No, absolutely. You're not leaving me out in the cold in any way, shape, or form. And we're going to be pointing that URL to the website very, very shortly. So, yeah, for those people that side of the pond who don't spell it the American way, have access to it. So, yeah, we're doing everything we can to cater for everybody. That's the main thing. So, look, obviously, we're moving on. We're going to continue picking up exactly where we left off. So, Jason, tell everybody what we got them in store for them today while I grab my other computer.
Yeah, you take care of your tech stuff, which is always super fun whenever that happens, right when the live button gets pressed. So, so far, over 9 episodes, we've built up and talked about basically everything from building the sales team in the process for recruiting to onboarding to getting people integrated to helping them become a part of your culture through training. So if you imagine the life cycle of a salesperson and from not knowing about your company to getting to this point where they're going to be butts in seats, as they say, then that's where we left off. Last week, episode 9, we talked about the nesting area, which is you've got training. People have gone through the training, however long that looks for your organization. Then that nesting period is how do you get them ready to go? How do you get them ready to leave the nest, if you will, and fly on their own as a baby bird and survive out in the wilds of the sales team, the sales floor? And so we're going to pick that up. And I think what would be a good place to talk, since we've been talking about training so much, I think one thing, and this is where I see organizations just assume that because they did some training, because they put their salespeople on the floor, that the salespeople are going to figure it out and then their job is done. Similar to, let's say, like the public education system, especially in the States, which is here's a bunch of schooling. Now go out in the real world. And we just assume that we don't need to teach you anything else ever again. Like, you know everything you need to succeed in life in all ways. And if not, you'll have to figure it out on your own. You know, and the constant complaint about the school system is they don't teach you how to deal with finances, emotional intelligence, relationships, like real world things that they just assume you're going to figure out, which then causes
if only they did. Just think of the world we live in now. You know, I think that's that's crazy. I always talk to some friends of mine and say, you know, let's talk about mortgages at school. Let's talk about, you know, what fears you're going to have to face and challenges you're going to have to face. It just never happens.
No. And so as an organization, you have the chance to build the organization as what you would want in the real world, as your slice of that, and set people up for success short-term and long-term. So part of that, and this is where I see a lot of organizations, again, they're not putting in the initiative. They're not taking, they're not being proactive about it, is building ongoing, continuous education as a part of the framework and the culture of what they do. So, Oliver, what do you see as some good parameters or some good, you know, practices for training is done, nesting is done, they're in the seat doing the job, but then as an organization, you want to give them some ongoing education, not coaching, not mentoring by a manager, but like trainers training or something is training them, whether it's LMS or in person.
I love that question. And let me tell you why I love that question. Because there is so many areas, so much content, so much knowledge, so much information that you can give to somebody. But one of the biggest pitfalls that I see a lot of companies face is we've got all this information. How do we give it over effectively without overloading people? And I think that's something that a lot of people have to realize, that if you're not careful, you are going to put people off. You are going to scare people. And we talked about this when we talked about all of the training, and we talked about how, you know, we could scare people off when they're going through induction. This is when, now, as you say, they're embedded, they're in place, they're ready to go. What do we need to do? So for me, I really would want to kind of look at this in maybe a three-pronged approach. The first one is to always have content at people's fingertips. And the reason why I say that is because there is going to come a time where these one-off types of questions come up, or these one-off scenarios that, you know, not everybody has. So a knowledge base is key. Okay. I think that's always good to have, especially for their education, because those one-off calls, you'll never have to struggle learning it again because you found it on that one-off. The second piece is constant training and education from a visual face-to-face trainer. And what I mean by that is taking your sales reps, taking your CX team or whatever it might be off the phones on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, quarterly, whatever your company allows you to do or enables you training function to take your guys off the phones. Not see it as a jolly, not see it as, you know, somebody just having fun. Really, I'm off the phone for a couple of hours or whatever. But we used, one of the companies I used to work for back in London, we used to do, and we called it Friday Bite Size. And every Friday, we would take all of our account management teams, our sales teams, our technology teams, our marketing teams, and we would do either the IT release updates, the technology release updates, the product updates. And rather than just put it out there in an LMS, rather than just put it out there in an email, we would do something that's specifically needed for the business there and then. And we were so grateful that we could do that every Friday. But like I said, not everybody allows that to happen. So whether it's weekly, fortnightly, monthly, whatever it might be, take your guys off, do refreshers, do educational pieces, but make sure, and this is my big point for every single call center manager, every single training manager out there, make sure that it's relevant to what's needed in the business at the time. Don't just do it because you found an error 6 months ago and think, just because that one error came up, I need to fix it. No, make sure it's relevant, make sure it's structured, and make sure it's educational for the team and there is a learning outcome. And then the other part for the other blended piece, the third pronged approach that I would go for is to have LMS content available, structured, organized, sent out, making it, again, timeline related, deadline related, and the fact that you are sending your reports out to your call center managers. Because if you are a training team and you have an LMS and you are not sending out reports, you are not updating your call center managers, your call center directors, your operational directors on where these teams are at, when there's a problem, in my opinion, those fingers are going to be pointed back at the training team because they are not keeping people updated. What do you think, Jason?
I love it. And I was taking some notes as you were going through that and put this on the screen. We're just going to keep evolving. And I think it's great. I think the three things you talked about are amazing. Just to recap. So, you know, as this ongoing, having the knowledge base, having things that are available for people at all times, whether they want to search for it, whether they need it. I think one of the things that's powerful as a tool with knowledge base training and content is also from a management standpoint, where I have a rep that I'm coaching or managing, right? And maybe it's in a coaching situation. And then what happens is I go to that rep, and let's go ahead and put Oliver back in there. Welcome back. So thanks. I go to that rep, and what I do is I say, okay, I'm going to coach you on this. You're having a challenge building rapport on your calls. And here is the knowledge base, and go into the knowledge base and pull up the video training and the content for that specific thing. I think it's not just like, hey, you have a knowledge base, go solve your own problems, but also as the tools in the toolbox where, you know, the manager, the leader, the coach, whoever it is, can say, boom, here's this. Instead of me telling you this over and over again, here, go through this, right? So I think that's huge. The one-off training I think is important in person. What you said is so key, which is making it relevant and making sure that it's something that's appropriate for now, using that time wisely. Here's the biggest thing I always hear from reps is they say, I don't want to do training, mostly because meetings, if not careful, they suck. But they say, well, you're taking me away from closing deals or my metrics or success. You're keeping me off the phone. I need more calls. Like especially if they're on the edge of hitting their KPIs, then any time away from the phone means they're worried that they're going to be losing and missing the mark. The number one thing I always tell reps, and I just make sure they understand, is that, you know, we're in business to make money. We're in business to be successful. The owner of the company, the leader of the company, this is not even a nonprofit, like a non-revenue company. This is not about not making any money. We need to make money and we need to generate deals to be successful, which means the number one goal for the organization is to close deals, right? Like we need the revenue. And if management and leadership decides that we need to do a training and we need to take everyone off the phone, then that means that it is very important, not meetings for the sake of meetings, but it's something that's so important that leadership has decided instead of everyone closing deals and making money, this is more important, which means if we're doing that, then they should take it seriously. And then to your third point, LMS content being sent out, like when there's something specific, send that out. And I love your part about the metrics and the reporting, because that's the thing too, is just because you send out videos or quizzes for people to take, there's no metrics, if there's no accountability, then there's no reason to assume people are just going to follow through. I mean, the good people who are motivated are going to do it anyway, but that's not the ones that you're trying to help the most part, right?
Yeah, no, you're not. And I think that's a really poignant kind of point that, you know, really needs to be drilled home, is that if you are not measuring people doing it, people won't do it. Because then if you're not sending out the reports and they go, do you know what? I got away. I didn't have to do the last four courses that were sent out. I'm not going to do any more until I get pulled up on it and just say, oh, sorry, I didn't realize. You got to remember, all of these people will give you an excuse if they can. Any excuse that they can give you to get out of doing stuff will happen. Absolutely. If you don't measure it, you can't manage it. I completely agree with that. You know, I touched point on a learning platform that a friend of mine's pushing out at the moment. And this thing is incredible. It's all done on your phone. Everything is there, iPhone, Android, whatever. And it's all gamified. There is competitions. You can sit in there and every single thing that you do is a game. He's asked me to put some content together for it, which I'm going to put on his platform. And what I do, you know, obviously when I'm training at serious things and leadership things and sales things, I'm like, okay, how do I turn this into a game? And that's been the fun part for me, is I've been doing it very differently than what I would. And it's kind of addictive to go back and to continue to play with it. It's weird. But that's the point. And I think you know, you said it well when you reiterate all of those points, Jason, that, you know, as long as we do those three, as long as we're having a blended approach and we're not just palming one off against the other, there is a really good way, a really good example of supporting your team once they're live. And people want to feel supported. People want to feel that they're part of that team. And I think that there are so many other ways that we could do this. And a lot of companies will talk about, you know, I think you brought it up earlier, like sales coaches or, you know, mentors and people on the floor. I mean, what do you think? How involved should a mentor, a sales coach, a sales leader be involved in the ongoing education? How, you know, where's crossing the line versus too much? What do you kind of think of that one, Jason?
Well, I think it really is. So here's the thing, is that most of the time, the sales manager, the team lead, let's say the manager of the salesperson, is very aware of what's going on and the trends and the challenges. Yes, there might be QA, there might be somebody listening to phone calls or technology that's going to point out where the issues are. But generally, when empowered, those frontline leaders know what's wrong or what's missing or what somebody needs to be coached on. And I think it's their team, so it's their responsibility, and they should work together with training and learning development to either put together solutions like what we were talking about in an LMS and some course, or having them do some training. I mean, I think they just need to work together. I think a lot of times, you know, and this is what happens, is sales blames training for not being effective or not setting people up, or not teaching them everything they need to know. Sales might blame another department for what's going on with their clients, or marketing. And instead, the more that a company as a culture is cohesive and everyone realizes they're playing for the same team, it's one company and it's one client, and that's all that matters for success. Everything else is one team in the middle of that, right? And so when you look at it that way, they should be working together. Training should want to help the ongoing, like the managers should be asking for help and then also seeing what they need to implement. And everyone, I'm going to say it should be working together in that capacity. But here's the big thing. And this is one point I want to make when we're talking about this ongoing education piece, is that it comes down to company culture, which we've talked about before. And then it also comes down to expectations. This is a huge one. So in that recruiting process, in the onboarding, and in the training, what needs to be verbalized and very clear to new hires, even before they're hired, when they start, and then when they're ongoing, is that your ongoing education, your continuous education, these things we're talking about, are a part of their job and a part of their culture. Because what happens sometimes is somebody gets hired, this isn't mentioned to them. They're in their role for a month, and then it's like, hey, you've got to go through this new training, or we've got these things. And people are like, wait, I don't want to do that. I want to just be on the phone, or I just don't want to be responsible for learning anything new. Versus when you set it up that way from the beginning and say, hey, part of this is we're going to give you education. They should be excited about it. And then when it happens, they shouldn't be surprised, right? They shouldn't be like, oh, wait, it's Friday. I have to do one of these Friday bite-sized things. Like, wait, where is this coming from? And no, I don't want to do it. I'm going to opt out, instead of it being like, no, this is the job. The job is all of these things. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, there are so many ways to look at it. And I want to pluck out a couple of key points over the last two things that you've said. The first one, jumping back, is when you say about the bite size and pulling people off. And, you know, these sales reps that don't want to be pulled off the phones because they want to stay there. They want to drive sales because they know they should still be there. I've worked with some of those people, and they just want phone time. They just want the commission. They just want the sales. But 9 times out of 10, you're pulling them off for a reason. You know, and it's not just one, it's a group of people, because there are updates or processes and things like that we need to fix. But then going into the other side of the educational piece and looking at everything else, I don't really want to add anything, because I think you kind of rounded it off very nicely. And I think you gave a lot of bombs there of what people really should be doing and how people should be looking at it. And I just think that we need to be involved, or trainers and sales coaches and managers and mentors need to be as involved as possible, without kind of crossing that line, without kind of doing anything wrong or anything to contradict the message or the training that's going out there. And as you say, you know, sales blaming training, training blaming sales blaming other departments when numbers don't go in. It is a very competitive culture. And, you know, are they being set up to fail? Probably not. Are the sales reps who aren't hitting their numbers giving the classic age-old excuse, I wasn't trained that, I wasn't told that information? Everybody right now is listening to this point. We've all heard it. We've all heard training being blamed for not giving the relevant information. They probably have, but it was something that was missed. But then again, never say never. There's no smoke without fire. Maybe there is something they missed. Maybe they weren't in for that day. Maybe they popped to the bathroom when that part of the training was being delivered. But this is why, and we go back to what we talked about in training, proof of learning, tests, concept, role plays, scenarios. That's how you make sure your people are ready. But again, there are going to be these one-offs that occur out of the blue without question. And I think we can sit there all day and we can point fingers. Everybody points fingers at everybody because of the culture. But I love what you said, Jason. And again, I said, I don't want to contradict this. It's the point when they realize it's working for one company, one direction, one goal. And I think that is sometimes the message that really needs to be pushed out to everybody, no matter who they are. And as you said, company values and everything else that goes with it.
Yep. And I think one of the keys too with this is, you know, and this is where a lot of companies struggle. So you've got to be able to look at it and figure out your plan. But the key with ongoing education, continuous education, as I would refer to it, which is everything post nesting, they're on the floor. They're now under the supervision of a floor manager and branch manager, whatever that looks like, right? So they're now officially out of the training section. The key is to be intentional and to be planned with it and to have it scheduled and built out. So if it's 6 weeks, if it's 6 months, if it's weekly, if it's monthly, like whatever that looks like, and this is the analogy for a new hire going through your training, it's like trying to drink from a fire hose. Like, it just doesn't work. There's so much being thrown at you. You can throw at somebody. You could literally crush somebody into oblivion with all the stuff you could throw at them on how to sell, ways to sell, over like every little thing. And there's an over under on when you put them out. I mean, we had 3 episodes of that. If people want to go back and listen to the us kind of go back and forth on that. But the key is what is it that you taught them in training? What is it that you know that you know that you know that they also need to know at some point, but you just couldn't fit it in, or you know that the human brain just can't handle it without trying it, right? Like, what's the difference between here's a book and a slideshow about swimming, and then at what point do you jump in the pool and then I help you? And it's like, okay, now let me show you some stuff about swimming now that we're in the pool, right? Like where's that difference? And so you've got to know, like, what didn't you teach them but you know is important, and then plan all that out. Maybe objection handling level 2, right? Moving the conversation forward level 2, like all of these different things, and literally map it out and schedule it out. Even if you don't use technology in an LMS, you're doing the in-person, right? The ones that you're talking about, the one-offs, but it's scheduled. I know exactly what, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to go into a week and be like, hey, I wonder what we should teach everybody this week. Like, no, don't, because then it won't happen.
Hey, it's Oliver Catt of Cutter and Catt, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success that you want. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps between where you are now and where you would like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's anything from training to systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything else in between, email info@callcenterconfidence and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we may be able to help. Now back to Jason and I chatting about call centers.
So let me ask you this. We're talking about mapping this out. We're talking about mapping the content out. We're talking about delivering the right message to the right people. I'm going to give you a scenario. What if you've not got the right people in place as a business to deliver this training and support, to deliver the coaching? The fact is that you're putting people in because you think they're good at what they do or they can do or they've demonstrated they can do. And I'm putting you on the spot with this one. But let's say you hire your trainer. And I know we've talked about this in a similar scenario previously, but with a different outcome. You hire that trainer, you hire that coach, you hire that mentor, you put them in place, and you say, hey, you're reporting into me, I'm the learning and development director, you're going out there, this is the training you go and do, go and do it. What risks do you run when somebody can't deliver that, or they don't know the process themselves, or they can't sell themselves, but because you think they're a good personality and you think they'll be good at what they can do?
I think that's the responsibility of the organization to ensure that they also will be successful short and long term with what's reasonable, if I understand your question. And so really that's an upper level leadership question, which is, okay, so who's going to support that training person, right? So if you're going to bring that person who is a good cultural fit, but doesn't know it and hasn't learned it or hasn't sold the product, what's their ramp up time, right? What's their speed to competency as a trainer going to be? And then what are you investing in them? And how are you going to support them? And here's the thing, right? It's like, you have to support them in getting up to speed or being competent, while at the same time, not letting all the baby birds in the nest die, right? So you have to make sure that they all make it as well. So it's this double responsibility. And this will, I don't know if you set it up this way. If so, it was awesome. But you know, sometimes you have internal resources and sometimes you need to get outside help as a bridge to get you there. By the way, anyone listening, go to callcenterconfidence.com. Check out our website. Is that where to put that in?
And plug. I wasn't set up that way, but you were kind of alluding to my point I wanted to get to, is the fact that, guys, remember how much we are investing in our front line, how much we're kind of investing in all of these other people. You've also got to invest in your trainers and your coaches, because these are the people that are pushing out that material. These are the people that are helping your organization grow. And I think it's safe to assume that I've worked with many clients that I've been brought into not to just train the front line, but to train the trainers in sales. Mm-hmm. Because they put somebody, as you said, as quite rightly you said, they've got the right cultural fit.
Right.
But they don't have the knowledge. I mean, in your opinion, would you hire a sales trainer who's never sold?
Who's never ever sold at all or never sold that product?
Okay. Let's go with very limited sales knowledge, never sold in general. Because obviously products are not always interchangeable, but you can move from one industry to the other, as we know.
Yeah.
You know, because it's being adaptable, it's changing what you do, changing your method, changing your approach. And if you're good at sales, you can switch that and you can be, as we all like to be called, adaptable. But yeah, very limited sales knowledge to none. Mm-hmm. Would you put somebody in that position?
So the answer is it depends, which is my answer for everything. Anytime you ask me anything, it always is going to be it depends. I have at times had training and development and even ongoing education, you know, such that I had multiple trainers. I had the trainer who did the classroom, and then I had two trainers who did the nesting. I've even had 3 weeks where there's trainer one for week one, which is classroom, you know, and knowledge base. And then trainer two, which is week two of nesting, and then a different trainer for the third week of nesting, or the third week of training, which was week two of nesting, before handing them off. Partially because I wanted people to experience two different sales styles, two different managers, get two different opinions, because everyone kind of has their own take on things, and get a different flavor. And I would hire that person who is a great cultural fit, that has really good training skills, is a really good teacher, and limited sales knowledge to handle the in-classroom product side, the basics of things, you know, and bring that part where then they hand it off to somebody else who's stepping in doing the sales. That's what I would do. If that's not an option, then I would hire that great cultural fit and I would put them through whatever training I have, and which I've done, and then put them on the floor and make them close deals for 60, 90 days.
Yeah.
Until they've been punched in the face enough and they've gotten enough time up enough times and gone, I get it. I know what it takes to be successful, at least for that first 90 days. And now I can teach that and then hand that person off.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, the only reason I ask is going from experience, I joined a company a long time ago that kind of removed sales coaches from the floor and they took them away. And I think they can be a good benefit depending on the type of environment you're in, but they were removed because, you know, there wasn't, before I joined, there wasn't the accurate way to manage them, to measure them, to make sure that they're being effective, let alone to ensure that they were delivering what they were supposed to be delivering. And I think that boils down to the manager and the line manager at that point to make sure that before you put somebody in, make sure you set goals, make sure you set targets. And ultimately, you know, make sure you're setting KPIs for anybody who works for you, or KPIs for your department should always filter down. But I think there are certain instances. And again, I've spoken to a couple of clients recently who have had sales coaches or sales trainers within their platform that have kind of been left to their own devices. And that's kind of where I was going, because my point is here. Don't ever leave people to their own devices. Because if you leave somebody to their own devices, are things always going to get done? Are you, as you put it up, you know, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So where do you think trainers in this ongoing development, maybe not necessarily the induction trainers, where do you think these people should sit in a reporting line within the organization? Now, again, a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about this. You know, should it sit within a HR functionality? Should it sit within the operations? Should it sit with the site leads or a global lead or a global sales lead? There are so many options. Where do you see these types of people that do the floor support and the continuous development? Now, again, you're going to have trainers that report into your training teams. Granted, that happens.
Sure.
But other members of these teams, other coaches, other field reps maybe who train on occasion, where do you see them fitting in?
I have not, and this is just in my experience, which is obviously somewhat limited. I haven't seen every company. I have not seen it be successful when training for sales falls under HR and is managed by HR, whether it's sales or operations, because there's some accountability to the leader of that department and that part of the org chart, where they have to be in sync and answering to that person who's then driving them to do the training that needs to be done for the success of that business unit, if you will. So I think it should fall under. Now, what I think for organizations with sales, obviously that's what we're talking about, is that the best thing to do is as you go up the org chart, routinely what's done is there's, you know, VP of sales, VP of marketing, VP of operations, and, you know, various things like that. And then at the top, you know, maybe there's a executive vice president, there's the CEO. If you have other C-suites in there, one of the biggest and best trends I've seen that makes me the happiest is the evolution of the chief revenue officer. You know, most B2B companies now are starting to build those, and that's what's called in that framework. But somebody who's in charge of sales and marketing at some point at the top, and it's all falling under, you know, one roof in one family, and then that's where it should be. And I think the trainers should answer to whoever's running the department they're training for, because again, it's to help the success of that group. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I see your point completely. I mean, jumping back to a company that I worked for in-house back in London many, many, many years ago. I loved working at that company. That was very much it. I mean, from a training team, I ran the training team on site. I reported into the chief service officer, or it was the COO kind of equivalent, you know, falling under that kind of CX sales in that bracket, because he ran that day-to-day operations. But I still had to kind of build my strategic relationships with the sales director, the marketing director, and everybody else, and kind of have my regular meetings and regular catch-ups and chats with them, because I need to make sure what I was putting out there or what my team was putting out there was fit for purpose. To the point where the company did want to hire sales coaches, and I believe we hired two. I mean, we had a relatively small sales team, like direct in-house sales team. Now, although I was part of the recruiting process, I was part of the hiring process, their reporting line was to the sales director with a dotted line into me as the head of L&D. So I think there's a lot of ways that you can structure it. But yes, 100%, that person should report, in my opinion, to that sales functionality, or answer to that sales functionality, or the site lead or the site head, because ultimately they are responsible for the sales that are going through the business. Now, when it comes to the product and whatever, or the development piece from my side, I would give that trainer or that coach the skills to help develop, help influence, help strategically deliver training. But as you say, quite rightly, the day-to-day sits with the operations. Like, there are so many ways to do it. So many companies do it differently. And as you said, I've not seen every company out there. I've worked with a couple that do it very different ways. Is there a white way? Is there a white way? I don't know what a white way is. Is there a right way, or is there a wrong way? I don't know. I don't think I could genuinely answer that, because I think it's down to the business, the industry, and the individual company structure that would make sense, my opinion.
Right. And I think when listening to you and thinking about this debate in my head that an organization might have, I think the key will fall into what is the main metric, the main KPI for a trainer? What is that? Is it, you know, to get somebody to close more deals? Is it retention, right? So somebody graduates training and then we're able to fill seats with people who are meeting their numbers. And then that will dictate, okay, so who's in charge of that? And that goes, you know, recruiting. So you have HR, but who's the hiring manager? Who's the one making decisions? Is HR making the hiring decisions? Is the sales manager, the branch manager, the VP of sales? Like, who's making the ultimate decision and taking responsibility for that salesperson? And then that's the training should be aligned with that. And again, like you said, all of these metrics and whoever is the one who's going to live or die based on what training, how effective training is, should obviously be responsible for it. And then it goes into that ongoing piece, like, because this is where our discussion today about ongoing continuous education is, if your trainer is then helping with continuous ongoing education, then the leader of the sales department of that business unit, it should be driving them as well, because they're going to have to balance the classroom training, new hire training, with the ongoing training. When HR is running it and HR is doing the training, and then you're pulling that and saying, hey, HR, I need you to do some ongoing training, HR is going to be torn between that training, new hire training, other departments training. And what I've seen a lot of times is that trainer just, there's only so many hours in the day, and then things aren't getting done.
Yeah. And I think that's a gray area. When I first started out in training, I was very much in the firm belief training sits under HR. It's a HR department. I was very naive back then, back in the day. I mean, to be fair, when I started, it was more product training. It was more customer service training with a hint of sales training. And some under HR, and again, people watching this or listening to this later are probably going to shout at me and say, shut up, because if my HR director is listening to you, you know, or my sales director is listening to you, things are going to change. It was a walk in the park reporting into a HR function, because they didn't necessarily understand the wider business. Mm-hmm. They didn't know the wider business, because HR has its own bubble. Hey, I can't wait till we get some people from HR on it. That's going to be an interesting conversation. No. But for me, and I worked for a company where I made the switch, and it wasn't like I left one company from HR and went to a company and I worked for the operation. It was the same company, and I reported into the HR director, and the HR director left whilst I was on holiday, vacation, leave, whatever you want to call it, wherever you are in the world. And I got a phone call from the head of the sales and the account management teams to say, hey, look, your boss is gone. You're now reporting into me. I was like, okay, great. We got on. We had a great relationship. I love that person specifically taught me everything that I needed to know to do what I do now. And I could not have been happier with that move at the time. Trust me, he rode me. He made me feel the pain every single day. And if you're listening, you know exactly who you are. Because we're still very good friends. We have a very good relationship. I still ask him for advice all the time. And finding a mentor, finding a leader, finding a manager like him, who made me see the operational side of things as a trainer, as a head of L&D, making me see the point where, you know, I got asked the question for the very first time, and I was still very naive and very inexperienced. Now, what revenue do you generate for the business? And I said, well, as a trainer, hey, man, what money do you bring into the business? I was like, we're trained. We don't bring money into the business, because that's what the HR side of you wants to say, because we're just here to do what we need to do and go in, go out, move on, move right in. And he asked me a third time, he said, what revenue do you bring into the business? And I went, I'm genuinely going to have to go away and think about this. And I did. I came back, and he made me see what I needed to see. And I think that was a big eye opener for me, because that allowed me to, as we say, transition this ongoing education, which I know we're talking about. I want to bring it back around to the point here, is that the way that I delivered, the way that I pushed my team to deliver ongoing training, I had to change their view from the HR to the business, to the operation, to the revenue, to the sales functionality of the business. And the fact is, like it or not, there are ways that trainers create revenue or generate revenue, whether you're doing induction training, whether you're doing ongoing training, whether you're doing bite-sized training. If you're doing something about HR, you're still bringing revenue in, because there is a message within that HR training. There is a learning outcome that will effectively affect money and revenue within the business. And I think that's a very good point, for especially for ongoing training. remember, everything is revenue related. I can't speak to that. I don't think I've had enough coffee.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about tying it to revenue. And that's one of those things that obviously this is where the metrics, the reporting come in, which is, and if an organization has been around for any length of time, it's okay, here's what normally happens to reps when they leave new hire training and they enter the floor. They post nest, now they're selling, right? Here's what normally happens. Here's where they start to fall off. Here's where the trends are. Here's the turnover. Here's their deal volume, their revenue, their ticket price, all of those things. And then what you do is you put in that continuing education, ongoing training program with a schedule, with the three different things that you talked about. And then you just measure that difference. And that difference, when you compare the apples to apples of a previous group or groups to this new group and the influence, then that's the revenue difference. That's the ROI. That's what we talked about weeks and weeks ago, which is being able to calculate the return on investment of training. Of, you know, that came up when we were talking about shopping for wanting to bring in an LMS platform. Like, what's the return on investment of reducing turnover, increasing sales? Like, how many sales do you need in addition to what you historically would do for it to pay for itself? Yeah. And then, yeah, that trainer needs to see that different. Because here's the thing. I'm so glad you brought this up. I see a lot of trainers who go from sales, usually from salesperson to some kind of team leader, manager, and then they go into training. And for a lot of them, they're like, this is great because now I don't have a quota. Now I don't have numbers I have to hit. Now I don't have the pressure of closing deals or losing deals or, you know, being accountable to sales revenue numbers. This is great. I can just train people, right? And I don't have that accountability. The key is that you've got to make sure they understand the accountability and the revenue, and that it's a different game and even a more important game for the organization than the individual sales contributor.
Yeah, you're right. And you just referenced my path as well.
Everyone's bad.
Hey, I started off on the front line. I wanted to be a manager. I wanted to be a supervisor. I wanted to work my way up into operations. Very quickly, I migrated into training. And that's exactly what happened.
But was it because you didn't want to have the pressure of selling, or just because there was more and different for you to do?
No, do you know what? I love the selling part of it. You know, I still love selling my products and getting on prospecting calls and chatting to prospects now when I'm having conversations, putting proposals out there, putting contracts out there for clients. I love the sales element. But all right, fair enough. I manage my own quota, granted. So I just have to slap myself on the wrist. But when I was a sales rep, when I was on the phones, when I was selling, yeah, I had some bad days. I had some good days. But it all boils down to, as you say, how we developed, how we trained, how we learned to better ourselves. And I think the key point, ongoing training and ongoing education, is we all know that 70% of what we do, the job that we do, we learn it whilst we're doing it. But that 30% is not to be just kind of dismissed and kind of put to, you know, what you did during induction and things like that. That is still a huge chunk of how you become the best version of yourself, selling everything out there. So whether you're on the front line, whether you're a sales manager, whether you're a VP, whether you're a sales director, my point is every single one of you still needs to be developed, be trained, go through ongoing and continuous development. Don't just think because you're a supervisor now or a manager or a VP or a CRO, as you mentioned. Everybody still needs to develop. Everybody still needs to read books. I'm still reading books. I still get through sales books, e-books, and everything else on sales tactics and improving my conversation, my presenting skills, my vocal skills, things like that. Everything is always about continuous development. And I think this is a really good point about today and why we kind of talked about ongoing development, because it isn't just when you finish doing what you do, you think you can stop. Have you seen that before, Jason, where people think, oh, I've got to where I want to get to now. I can stop learning.
I think that's, again, that symptom of the public school system, especially in the States, where it's like you're learning. And a lot of times people feel like, and I've seen in myself, is like, learn this information so you can take this test, so you can pass this class, so that you can then move on and maybe even forget everything you learned because there's no bigger picture, right? And so it's just checking boxes. And then what happens, that turns into adults where most people don't read. I don't know the stat, but there's something about how, you know, whatever percentage of adults don't read another book after they finish schooling ever again. And, you know, it's just like, hey, I've got enough information, and people are okay with what they know or what they pick up along the way, but not being intentional about it. And I see that a lot, where as an organization, if you know that's the case, and you can hire people into a culture that's open and curious and just wants to know and absorb as much as they can and improve all the time, then it's going to be easier too when you set that intentional plan for the ongoing education so that it's there, right? And what will happen is when you do that over time, people will just get on board, or they'll get off the bus, and that's okay for your organization as well. But you just want to put that out there and mentor people. Some people don't know. Some people, I remember myself, like, I didn't read books after school. Like, I didn't do any of that. I wouldn't do any of that. And then I had some mentors and a group that I would meet with regularly, and I was around this group, and they were like, okay, here's, like, let's talk about this book, The E-Myth. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, I haven't read a book and I don't know how long. And then, like, it pushed me. I pushed myself to want to become a learner again. But we're talking a gap of, like, you know, let's call it 14 years of nothing, let's say, and then kicked it into gear.
Yeah. I think I like this whole being around people that want to drive, you know, reading books and self-improvement. I follow a couple of people on LinkedIn who always talk and recommend about books and things like that in a sales environment and a leadership environment. And I always try to read or kind of purchase or get a copy of whatever it is they're reading. One person in particular, who I'm not going to mention their name, manages, coaches, and leads a sales team, an outbound sales development team. And one of the things they do every month is, so I mean, it's 12 books a year, but it's 12 books more than a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. And what they do is he sets his entire team, and they're not big books, you know, they're small books. He sets the entire team the challenge to read that book within about 3 weeks. And then at the end of the third week, end of the third week into the fourth week, they sit down, they have a discussion about the book. Everybody's going to come with their ideas and their points about the book. Was it relevant? Was it not relevant? What did they take away from it? And they have a formal discussion and kind of not study group, but a formal breakdown of all of the relevant bits that are relevant to their jobs and how they can implement that into to what they do on a day to day. And I think that's a really good tactic. It's a really good way of, and I like to use this, a friend of mine used it, is put the monkey on someone else's shoulder, is get them to come to these meetings and them tell you rather than you tell them and you having to do all the work. And it's not passing the buck, it's not making excuses, but you're actually allowing some people to learn and go away with that knowledge. When I do training, you know, I make sure that people have expectations of what they're going to take away from their sessions. And a lot of trainers do this. I'm not reinventing the wheel here. But I do my preliminary build-up about information, pre-training, pre-class, what they're going to get, what they're going to expect. So you set the tone so that when you go in there and I'm doing a leadership development workshop, I sit down there and I give everybody post-it notes and say, right, okay, three things. Leadership, what do you want to learn? What do you want to get out of it? Put it on a board and go through. Well, we're going to touch on this. We're going to touch on that. We're going to go through this. Because I think it's good for people to understand that, actually, guys, I'm going to talk about points that you've just told me you want to learn. Even though your company have hired me to come in here and do this, I've now got your buy-in because it's something you want to take away from it.
Yep.
And that's a powerful tool to use.
I love it. Well, and I love that book idea and that book club. I think there's two parts. There's one is hiring the right people who, mm-hmm. again, cultural fit, who are, you're hiring them for their openness, their curiosity, and then setting the tone that this is what we do as an organization, right? Here's the kind of people we are. Here's the kind of group that we are. Here's what we do. and here's why we do it, right? Not just so I can push stuff down your throat, not just so I can get the most out of you, but so that you can learn and grow and be happy and successful. Because if you're successful as a salesperson, then the company's winning. A lot of times employees think, oh, well, they're just making me do this, or they want me to change this, or they want me to go through this training. It's like, no, like the company is in business to make money. And the best way they do that is by you knocking it out of the park and being successful. And so there's this interesting dynamic. Again, I think a lot of it goes back to the public school mode, which is, you know, how people feel about teachers or the school system and what they're supposed to get out of it, and then how much is applicable, whether that's right or not. But I love your idea and your concept about the book club. I have fortunately been, like with my book, several organizations have done that same thing where they have got my book and then given it to a whole team. And I've actually participated in that, which is super fun. There was one organization I worked with in the past year that they took it one step further, and they didn't make it a requirement. They didn't say everyone has to partake in this. But what they did, both sales and on customer service side, is they would do their monthly book club, and they would have the meetings, and they would have the assignments, you know, people just making sure people are digesting it, not just, you know, checking the box. And then they had it as part of the comp plan as a bonus tier, where if you participated, you would get a cash bonus. They're essentially paying people and rewarding them and incentivizing them for learning, for growing, because again, that helps everybody. And what was cool is it wasn't required, because when you require it, then people are going to resist and it just doesn't work. You make it purely voluntary, it might work, it might not. If you can incentivize it and show people, hey, we take this so seriously, we literally are going to pay you if you do this because it makes you better, which makes us better, which I think is some great ideas. And to close out here, I was thinking of a question before you were talking about the book club. And I think this is good to start doing this, especially with our shows and conversations, people listening, is, you know, how can you, somebody who's listening to this, whether you're running an organization, you're an owner, CEO, leader of the sales team, a trainer themselves, is how can you help your reps this week improve their knowledge, skills, and or mindset? Like, what can you do this week? And then what can you put in place in this ongoing continuous education framework? What can you do long-term?
I love that. I think that's a great question. And I want to hear people's answers. So next week, If you come back, live stream, let us know. Tell us what you did with that, because I think that's a really good question, because again, something to take away, implement, do, and learn from. I love that.
Yep. So, and if you want to, between now and then, as we wrap up today, you can always contact us at info@callcenterconfidence.com, or you can go to the website, join the email list. You can, there's also an Oliver at and a Jason at callcenterconfidence.com. But our regular information obviously is on the screen as well. So you can find us both on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. We're both on there along with the show. We're growing. We're on those platforms. The show is on the platform. If you have ideas, or you have thoughts, or you have questions, or you want to share like what you did this week, feel free. Next week, like Oliver said, come in the chat, let us know so we can discuss it and highlight it and let you brag to others about it in the chat. Or between then, feel free to message us. Feel free to find us on LinkedIn, chat with us, send us emails, and just reach out. And as we mentioned earlier, make sure to go to the website, which is callcenterconfidence.com. And then I know you put this in the chat on LinkedIn. So if you want to sign up, so people, if you want to put this on your calendar, so every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Or 10 a.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. GMT, they can go to lu.ma/callcenterconfidence.
And the good thing is, we've already got signups.
Yes. So people are signing up. It's great. Join that community that we've got. It's on the calendar. You've got the updates. You get the links for it each time. And that's it. Anything to leave people with here, Oliver?
I think there's a lot of takeaway from here. You know, thinking about what you're doing to develop and onboard. Think about Jason's question. Bring that back next week. And like I said, we want to hear from you. You know, remember, this is for you. It's about you. It's about every single level within the call center. And you'll notice on the website, you know, we talked about leadership, we talked about recruitment, we talked about education, we talked about training. We've still got HR. We've still got workforce. quality and compliance is our big one that we're being asked for. So we're going to talk about QA, how we measure the QA and how we get everything in place. There's so much more to discuss. But like I said, this is for you, written for you. It's all about you. So please get in touch and let us know what you want to see, you want to hear afterwards. And of course, eventually we'll be podcasting this so you can listen to it on the go.
That's it. Oliver, thanks again, once again, for joining and persevering through the technical challenges in the beginning. Good job with that. And that's it for this episode of Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat. We will see you all next week, same time, and probably the same place. See you then.
See ya.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.